case number 10-5144, Defenders of Wildlife et al. Appellants versus Kenneth Lee Salazar in his official capacity as Secretary of the Interior et al. Mr. Presser for appellants, Mr. Haig for appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors. Timothy Presso for the appellants. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This appeal concerns the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's conservation obligations under the National Wildlife Refuge System Improvement Act. Plaintiffs challenge the service's 2007 Bison and Elk Management Plan for the Jackson Hole National Elk Refuge, in which the service elected to maintain indefinitely an artificial winter feeding program for the refuge elk herd. Already, the crowded conditions on the refuge feed lines have afflicted the elk with unnaturally high levels of wildlife diseases, including brucellosis. Now the feeding program threatens widespread infection of the elk herd and long-term contamination of the refuge itself with lethal chronic wasting disease. Nevertheless, the service's plan offers an aspiration only to someday reduce the extent of feeding and leaves the actual termination of feeding to a veto by the state of Wyoming, a staunch feeding advocate. Accordingly, the service violated the Improvement Act. I'd like to turn first to the Improvement Act's Healthy Populations mandate. The Act requires the service to conserve refuge, wildlife, and wildlife habitat, and defines conservation as meaning to sustain, restore, and enhance healthy populations of wildlife.
There are a lot of other things the Act requires as well, right? I mean, a long, long list, right?
There is a 14-item list of things the service is supposed to do in administering the Act. However, and of course the government relies heavily on that. However, I think the better construction of the Act is that the conservation mandates have first priority, and that's for three reasons. First is that the Act establishes the fundamental mission of the system as the conservation of wildlife. And if we look at the legislative history, the House report being the principal document, it's made abundantly clear that wildlife and wildlife conservation must come first in the administration of the Act. And lastly, and I think of significant weight, the Fish and Wildlife Service itself has formally interpreted the Act in its management policies. Now, that interpretation was done through notice and comment rulemaking, although the policies are not in the Code of Federal Regulations, but it was done through notice and comment, and I think it's deserving of a high amount of respect from the court for that reason. And in that interpretation, they explicitly adopted a wildlife-first construction of the statute and stated that, in fact, went so far as to state that the Act clearly establishes that wildlife conservation is the singular National Wildlife Refuge System mission. And as to the biological integrity and environmental health mandates that are also at issue in this case, they stated that those are critical components of wildlife conservation. So when we talk about the mandates that we seek to enforce in this case, I think it's very fair to say that those are the mandates the service itself has identified as the first priority under the Act. As to the healthy populations mandate, the Act does not define...
Is there only one way to go about wildlife conservation? Does it necessarily... How do you measure? Over what time horizon do you measure the success of an effort to conserve wildlife?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the Act deals in likelihoods. And that requires the service to examine what are the likely impacts of our management decisions and how will those affect the refuge and its wildlife. And if we look at the service's definition of healthy populations, it speaks directly to that issue because it talks about minimizing the likelihood of long-term adverse impacts to the refuge and its wildlife. Yet the decision in this case by the service's own admission, it's their science, not ours, maintains a high risk of depopulation of the elk herd or population decline due to chronic wasting disease. It is not rational for the service to determine that it has minimized the likelihood of long-term adverse impacts when it maintains a high risk of depopulating the signature elk herd of the refuge. We see a similar disconnect between the facts found.
What do you mean by depopulating the elk herd?
What I mean is, if you look at the
You're not putting it on a glide path to extinction. There's nothing like that.
I think what it means, first and foremost, is killing elk that show symptoms of chronic wasting disease. That's the first thing. The second thing is the widespread mortality that would result from infection of chronic wasting disease is always lethal. And the third thing is the environmental contamination that persists on this land that for years these elk have learned to come to every winter, and now it turns into a killing field for them because the very earth, the very soil, infects them with the lethal disease. So that, I think that's what the service is. If we look at the record, that's pretty clear what the service is talking about when it says depopulation. Now, I do want to address, Your Honor, perhaps you're referencing, Wyoming makes a number of arguments that, well, this disease isn't that big a deal. It's very important, I think, for the court to understand that
My point isn't so much that the disease isn't a big deal. It sounds horrible from the description of it. But don't we have here just two different approaches to the same problem? And you just don't like their approach because it's not as rigorous as you would like to be. You want it over in 5 years. They want it over at some period of time, depending on facts on the ground, right?
Well, let's be clear about a couple. First of all, I think it's important to note the case, although the other side tries to do this, is not reduced to a dispute about which one alternative versus another, because of the alternatives in the EIS, my clients favored one certain one, but the key point is they wanted a commitment to terminate the feeding program, so I don't want to get caught up in the specific time frame. But I think the important thing that I want to emphasize to the court is this refuge,
is it your contention that under the government's plan there will not be a termination of the feeding program?
There is no commitment to terminate the feeding program. What they've said is we want to reduce it. They talk about reducing the average 7,000 wintering elk to 5,000, but here's the problem with that. The service itself has said it is unlikely that even cutting the number of feeding years by half would substantially alter the high potential for transmission of chronic wasting disease through environmental contamination. So they've said cutting it in half doesn't get the job done.
What's your best argument that the statute itself requires a commitment to terminate feeding?
I think, Your Honor, it's an arbitrary and capricious review for the court.
I was asking about that's the secondary point. Maybe you're saying the statute doesn't require it.
Well, I'm saying the statute doesn't speak to feeding.
Okay,
absolutely, it does not. But it does talk.
So then this is our review here is for arbitrary and capricious.
And it is, Your Honor, we would submit this as a hornbook failure to the agency to articulate a rational connection between the facts found and the choice made.
On your argument that you mentioned right at the beginning that the plan the agency adopted here gives Wyoming a veto?
Yes.
Wouldn't you be fully protected if we, in our opinion, simply quote from the government's brief here and say, look, we really don't have to deal with that issue because the government has assured us, quote, the plan does not give WGFA, whatever it is, give it a veto. It's, quote, aspirational. Not legally binding.
No, Your Honor, because the problem is that the language of concern is in the refuge's comprehensive conservation plan, and that is a legally binding instrument under the Improvement Act.
Well, but our opinion would relying on the government's assurances that it isn't, would fully protect you, wouldn't it?
Your Honor, as much as I respect this court, there are a number of jurisdictions where a case like this could be brought in which this court's decision would be only persuasive authority, and
where would that be? You mean in a state court?
The District of Wyoming?
A federal court?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that what the concern we would have is that a third party could come in and say, look, Fish and Wildlife Service, you said you would terminate feeding.
Why would the government take a position here that it's not binding and take the opposite position in a federal court in Wyoming?
Your Honor, I'm not saying the government would take an opposite position. I'm saying a plaintiff in such a case who did not want the feeding program terminated could rely on the language in the plan and the enforceability of the plan to assert that the government's decision.
Who would they sue? The government?
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service,
and
presumably.
The Fish and Wildlife Service would say it's not legally binding.
Yes, but I would submit to the court that it would be the province of a federal judge in that case.
It's classic judicial estoppel. I mean, we see We don't see a lot of those cases, but that one's pretty clear to me.
Well, that...
Isn't it? I mean, you can't take a position in one court, have that position induce a judicial decision, and then take the opposite position in another court.
I agree that I believe you're absolutely correct, Your Honor, that the federal government could not do that, and we would certainly, if we were involved in that case, assert that principle. Yeah. But what I am saying is that a third party could make such an argument, and the court hearing that argument would not be bound by such a decision. But as to I want to go back to your question about what is the statutory basis for our claim.
Then how, I don't understand, what difference does it make what we do here? No matter what we do, even if we granted you all the relief we can, couldn't it be relitigated in Wyoming?
Well, Your Honor, I think if the court agrees with us that the decision by the agency was unlawful and remands the agency, then there will be collateral estoppel and res judicata impacts of that judgment, and we would be able to enforce those against the agency.
Then I don't understand why you wouldn't be fully protected under judicial estoppel for the same reason, if we write that in our opinion.
Well, Your Honor, I guess what I'm forecasting, the possibility is that my clients might not be a party to the action that would be down the road by some adverse interest to my clients seeking to enforce the plan.
But the government will be in that, right?
The government would be, Your Honor. Sure. I absolutely agree with
you. You're imagining a hypothetical situation where the district court judge disregards the government's argument and our opinion.
All I'm saying to the court is that it would be this court's opinion would presumably be only persuasive authority to a court in a different circuit. I will say, however, Your Honor, that regardless of the veto issue and however the court determines to resolve the government's characterization of its actions here, that the plan is unlawful for the reason that it does not commit to terminate feeding, even apart from however that discussion of the eventual termination might proceed, because of the healthy population's duty. And the other thing I want to highlight for the court is the duty to ensure, that's the statutory term, ensure the environmental health and biological integrity of the refuge. The ensure duty, nevertheless, despite that duty, the service here has acknowledged the potential for a rapid spread of chronic waste and disease and extensive contamination of the environment. Now, the service's internal communications paint a grimmer picture and go so far as to speak of creating a Superfund disease toxic site that would require actually fencing elk out of the National Elk Refuge to avoid further infection and contamination. Now, when we talk about the duty to ensure the environmental health and biological integrity of the refuge, that duty cannot rationally be met by a decision that maintains a high risk of those consequences. And also, Your Honors, there's the duty to ensure that the purposes of the refuge are satisfied. That purpose, since 1912, has been to provide a winter game and elk reserve. And in 1927, Congress added that the refuge is for the grazing of and as a refuge for American elk. It is not rational for the service to say it has ensured the preservation, achievement of those purposes when, by its own admission, it maintains a high risk that literally the elk would have to be fenced out of the refuge. That's not rational decision making.
So your argument is, as I understand it, is it's arbitrary and capricious here because there's no firm commitment to terminate the supplemental winter feeding program. Would your argument be the same had they made a commitment to do it in 20 years?
My clients certainly supported a commitment to terminate, and I don't know what a commitment means other than a time frame. As to the
argument is the way the service has viewed this, they want to take some intermediate steps that they view as making on the ground circumstances more compatible with ending the feeding program.
Yes.
And your concern is 15 years from now,
here we are
making the same argument.
And let me just say about that, Your Honor, that they say we want to take some steps, and maybe if the stars align, we can terminate the program someday. What we're saying is when you're talking about a threat that literally will put the elk refuge off limits to elk, it's not okay to say maybe someday.
So even though there is science that is in the record that talks about we're not exactly sure what's going to happen, what the impact will be. Nevertheless, the service has to make a commitment now.
Well, I think a fair characterization of the science, Your Honor, is that the service recognizes the most likely outcome is similar to that as seen on game farms, where infection was in excess of 50%. And given that the service has defined its statutory duties as dealing and minimizing the likelihood of those kinds of harms, the service's own finding of that likelihood ought to have weight. Yes, we do absolutely assert
Isn't
that.
Isn't your argument that there are non-scientific factors at play here, and that what's really going on is there taking into account tourism and things of that nature that aren't supposed to be protected under the statute to the degree conservation is?
That is absolutely right.
That's the heart of
it. That is the heart of our argument. The service elected to prioritize matters such as Wyoming's herd objectives and the hunting and recreational desires of some elements of the local community over the important steps to address this critical threat. I see my time is retired.
Well, I'll give you a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Counsel for Appalese.
May I please the court? Mark Haig from the Department of Justice for the United States.
Is your opposing counsel right that the government is not committed to terminating the supplemental feeding program?
The plan does not state that supplemental feeding will be terminated at any date. Date certain. It keeps open the possibility of continuing supplemental feeding.
For how long? Your possibility that 30 years from now there would be supplemental feeding?
The plan doesn't answer that question. But yes. So the answer is yes. There is.
Isn't that a problem? Why doesn't it? Why doesn't it have some date certain by which this will be over? I mean, am I right? There's no dispute that this is a practice that. Is hurting the herd, right?
There's
working,
a record
working at cross purposes with the statute, which says you're supposed to be conserving wildlife. This is a problem. Everyone recognizes it, right?
Well, it poses risks, but it's also but supplemental feeding is also a useful management tool, and there's uncertainty about the risks and how best to manage the risks. There are also
the agency can foresee a possibility where there is supplemental feeding going on. 15, 20 years from now, if it doesn't turn out to pose the risk that
yes, that's correct. And there are countervailing concerns about terminating supplemental feeding if the conditions on the ground don't support it.
Do you agree with your opposing counsel that those countervailing reasons need to sound in conservation of the species primarily?
And not
tourism for Wyoming.
The overarching purpose of the refuge and of the Improvement Act is conservation. That's the fundamental purpose here. The Secretary, in seeking to achieve that purpose, is supposed to consider a number of other factors.
Is tourism one of them?
Yes. Well, wildlife-related public use is definitely one of them. But that's not. I don't think that. Defender's characterization of the agency's rationale here is really fair, because the concerns about terminating supplemental feeding prematurely are wildlife-related and conservation risks. They're not just political or social concerns. If supplemental feeding is terminated before the herd numbers are sufficiently reduced and before the habitat improvement steps that the plan calls for have taken effect, you wind up with thousands of elk on the refuge that are starving and that are dispersing from the refuge into suburban Jackson, where they do a lot of property damage, and into adjacent ranchers' hay, where they do a lot of damage, and they also create a risk of spreading brucellosis. So there are disease risks in all different directions. I guess the other factor that Defender's argument just doesn't recognize or acknowledge, the service can't manage this refuge as an island. The elk travel on and off the refuge. They travel throughout the state across multiple jurisdictions. This debate about whether the state has a whether the plan gives the state a veto or not. The government's position is that it doesn't, but that's really kind of beside the point.
Suppose it did. Wouldn't it be unlawful?
I don't think that it would, Your Honor, really? Given the multiple places that the statute...
You think the government could give the state, with its very different priorities, a veto over its conservation obligations under the statute?
Well, I guess it depends on what the scope of the veto is.
A veto is a veto.
What is it they get to veto? The argument here is not that the state can veto the entire plan. The argument that Defenders is making is that the state can veto a decision to permanently terminate supplemental feeding. The plan doesn't do that. The Fish and Wildlife Service does not intend to do that, but I do not concede that it would be unlawful to do that, given that...
You wouldn't have an objection if we said that in our opinion.
No, absolutely.
And can you think of a way to protect the plaintiffs here from their concern about what might happen in a Wyoming court?
I think that if the court says it, and if the United States says it in its brief, and the state of Wyoming says it in its brief.
The Wyoming says that in its brief?
In its brief, yes. Uh-huh. Yes. And they said it in the district court, too. They initially made the argument that the plan gave them the veto, but then they abandoned that argument before summary judgment. So
I thought the argument was a little broader than that. Maybe I misunderstood. In other words, we all know how vetoes can be used. It can be used as to the ultimate decision. It can be used as to, antecedent decisions that are headed toward the ultimate decision.
I'm not sure what your question is, Your Honor.
You say you will concede that the state does not have a veto if the Fish and Wildlife Service decides to end the supplemental winter feeding program.
Yes. I don't view that as a concession. I view that as an affirmative statement of the United States position here.
Right. But I'm just trying to understand the scope of that veto power.
Well, there is no legal veto power in this plan.
As to anything.
That, right, but there is a commitment to working cooperatively with the state, and that is a
whether or not the difference between cooperation and veto.
Okay,
but I just want to be clear that I think that the argument here is the state cannot veto decisions. Cannot be in a position to veto decisions that the Fish and Wildlife Service makes, even though it's not the ultimate decision to terminate, but it's leading to
yes, that decision. That's correct. But the question about a legal veto or not misses a much more important practical point, which is that the state, by law, has responsibility for determining the size of the herd, for managing the herd off the refuge, for controlling the hunting season, for operating its own feed grounds.
So if the Fish and Wildlife Service says we want to reduce the herd to 20% of its current number, can the state veto that?
As a legal matter, no. As a practical matter, yes.
Yeah, see, that's the problem here, isn't it?
Well, I think that's what makes managing the refuge difficult, because the refuge can't be managed as an island.
So if the government hasn't made any commitment, we're 30 years from now having the same discussion.
No, I don't think we are, Your Honor, because the government has made the plan makes commitments, and the state supports commitments to take a number of significant steps that reduce the size of the herd. The bison herd is being cut in half. The elk herd is being reduced by 2,000, so that the number of elk wintering on the refuge go from 7,000 to 5,000.
Let me back up and ask something that is kind of fundamental, and maybe I just missed or not understanding. Is it the government's position that the risk that's caused from the supplemental feeding can actually be managed. At some level, it can be managed. That the supplemental feeding does not pose a risk that has to be eliminated altogether. Is that the point?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. But the agency's intent here, and it's clear from the ROD and the environmental analysis, is to limit the use of supplemental feeding.
Limit, but not eliminate. I think that's the point I'm getting at.
There's not a...
As I understand the defender's argument, is that the nature of this activity is so inherently injurious to the herd that it is not a risk that can be managed. It's one that needs to be eliminated. And I think their argument is that the science shows that, and so therefore the agency must respond to that in a rational fashion. And I think they're saying it's not rational for you to say, based on the evidence, no, we can manage this risk. There is a scenario out there in which supplemental feeding continues.
Well, I don't think that there's an intent on the part of the agency to continue it.
Then why doesn't the agency say that? Our goal is to end supplemental feeding, and this is the way we're going to get there.
Because they don't, a couple of reasons. Because they don't know how they're going to get there, and they don't know how long it would take to get there. Because they can't get there as a practical matter.
Right. Why can't they say we are going to get there, though? Because this is so dangerous. We're going to get there at some point. Don't know yet how. But
well, I don't know that defenders would be any happier with that. That saying, well, we'll get there someday, but we don't know how.
I'm just troubled by the fact that you're. Like maybe you're saying now that the government's intention is to get there. If it can be done, you'll do it. This is such a dangerous activity.
I guess what the plan does in the context of uncertainty, a need for cooperation, and disagreement about...
But is there any uncertainty about the fact that supplemental feeding poses a threat to the herd?
Well, it
dangerous.
Yeah, I mean,
you're uncertainty about that?
There's no uncertainty that there are disadvantages to supplemental feeding. There is uncertainty about the scope of that risk and how to balance that risk against other risks if you don't do supplemental feeding. Other risks to the herd. If you don't do supplement and to the adjacent landowners and to the state. If you don't do supplemental feeding
with tourism
and to tourism and to public wildlife-based recreation on the refuge, which is one of the purposes, and to the state's interest in this resource. So the Fish and Wildlife Service has the legal authority to take whatever steps it wants to take, but it is working in the context of having to cooperate with another sovereign and come up with a plan that will address these concerns. So what the plan does here is it takes significant concrete steps in the direction that everybody agrees need to be taken, and it says we're going to work to figure out what we do as we go forward. It's not perfect, but waiting for agreement or for something that would be perfect would preclude taking steps that need to be taken right away, and that's what this plan does. If there are no further questions, I will sit down, and I will just, I didn't get a chance to introduce counsel from Wyoming is here at council table, Mr. James Casty, and he is available if the court has any questions for the state. But otherwise, if the...
So you take issue, do you, with the defender's interpretation of the mission of the refuge and of the act?
Kind of. I guess, there's no disagreement here that the fundamental mission of the wildlife refuge system is conservation. And I think they are trying to create a legal argument where it's really just a question of how do you achieve that conservation goal. They have one view of what the best way to get there is. The secretary has a different view. The view is based on a robust record and a full consideration of all the risks, including the disease risks, but a consideration of the multiple factors that are in the statute, which include coordinating with the state, and the understanding that the refuge is only one piece of a much larger ecological system and a much larger puzzle, and that the refuge can't be managed as an island.
What's happening 90 miles away?
90 miles away is the location of the, I believe, the closest confirmed case of chronic wasting disease.
And what's happening there?
Not much. The difficulty, the uncertainty about chronic wasting disease is in the eastern part of the state, where it has been present and endemic for 30 years, there are thriving wild free-ranging herds of elk and mule deer. So there's the disease prevalence, I believe, averages 4% or 5% in those areas, but there are still plenty of elk. The conditions on the refuge are different and more problematic because in concentrated situations, the prevalence of the disease is much higher, and then there's the risk that the disease agents get into the soil where they are persistent. And that's why the plan takes immediate steps to reduce the size of the herd, the amount of feeding, the number of days of feeding each year, the date of when it starts, the date when it stops, to increase the availability of forage so that the herds are dispersed. So those are all measures, very concrete measures, that this plan takes to address that risk. But the chronic wasting disease is not there yet. Nobody knows when it will get there. I think the expectation is that it eventually will, but nobody knows when or how it will behave once it gets there.
Right. Thank you, Council.
I'll just make a couple of brief points. The court asked about whether this is a risk that can be managed. Government counsel said it was. I want to direct the court to page 754 of the appendix, the services EIS. Current management options are limited. Several states have quarantined and or depopulated infected captive herds. And a perhaps more candid assessment, Dr. Rofe, the services wildlife disease specialist, on page 301 of the record, states, if we continue with abnormally high elk populations fed on the National Elk Refuge, the refuge environment will likely be highly contaminated before we can significantly alter management. That means the elk refuge, even if we reduced elk numbers and discontinued feeding after CWD entered the system, would serve as a source of infection to elk and deer for some time to come. So this idea that we can sail along for 30 years and adjust management once the problem hits is in stark contrast with the service's own findings.
That's not quite. I mean, they're not just sitting back and doing nothing and waiting for it to hit. That's not a fair characterization, is it?
I was responding to council's suggestion that the risk can be managed and we can proceed with feeding and then take steps if the risk actually shows up on the refuge. But that's a fair point, Your Honor, but let me just say as to that, they are taking steps. They are unfortunately insufficient steps. The service has acknowledged that frequent winter feeding will continue. They have said that...
But doesn't that come down to a scientific judgment here? And don't we typically defer to agencies when they have scientific expertise?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, and I think the court would can properly defer to the service's finding that even cutting the number of years of feeding by half would not reduce the risk. That's the service's scientific finding. The when it comes to their conclusions in the plan, those aren't even clothed as scientific judgments. They're policy judgments, but the service's science goes the other direction. Lastly, the service says we cannot manage the refuge as an island, but yet their own plan, which did call for phasing out feeding, talked about using their authorities to reduce the elk herd on the refuge and in nearby Grand Teton National Park to a population that can be sustained on the native range. So it's not as if they're saying this is out of our hands. They said we can do this within our own hands. We elect not to because there are other countervailing pressures. Thank you very much.
Thank you. take the matter under advisement.